Alright, let's start this lesson. I like grandkids. I think grandkids are fantastic. Do anything you want to with them. Send them home. Be done with them. So that appeals to me. My attention span is not the longest in the universe, so whatever. So, here a while back, I got thinking. I wonder if my grandkids really love Grandpa. You know, you do something nice and then they say, oh, Grandpa, you're the greatest. But, you know, I just thought, do they really, really like and love Grandpa? So I decided that I was going to have a little test. So what I did was I bought some beautiful bags of candy. And so I put candy in piles. And I told them that they could have the candy in any pile they wanted, except one pile that I had set aside and said, you can't eat any of that candy. Because if you love me, you won't eat any of that candy. Well, everything went fine. So every evening I would come down and I would look at the piles. And there, that pile was still there. Well, one day I came down and the pile, they had eaten all of it. The ones that I told them. So I came to the only logical conclusion a person can come to is that they didn't love me. So I got my skillet out and I banged them over the head. I told them, get your rear end up there in bed. No supper for you. And then I hired a guard company 24 hours a day. They sit there and do nothing but watch the rest of that little pile of candy with skillets in their hand to remind the grandkids, if they're ever tempted to make a run for that candy, that those guards are going to bang them right over the head. Now, did y'all hear about the governor Wyoming or Montana, somewhere up there? And there was two guys that were scheduled to die. And so the governor brought them in, listened to their pleas. They were pretty horrible people. And he sentenced them both to death. Well, the governor had a real good son. And so the son came to the governor and said, I tell you what, why don't you let me die in their place? And the governor said, oh, okay. So they executed the son and the two guys went free. Well, one of them, it really affected his life, and he became a preacher, and he converted, 19,214 people. But the other one went out and robbed 7 banks and killed 2 people. And then when he came back in front of the governor says, well, I'm going to kill you, and had him executed. Now, in the last 5 minutes, I have given you the plan of salvation from the Garden of Eden to judgment time. Do you understand that? So that's the end of class today. law and grace, the great theologians of the world say the Old Testament, we're under law. The New Testament, we're under grace. I say we were never under the law.
Amen.
We were under grace before we were even created. Now, let me go through some things, because I really would like to teach again sometime in this class. So I'm going to ask some questions. Now, I don't want you to raise your hands. See, when I do teaching, you know, I'm a sales trainer. A lot of times I just have them write questions out, and then I tell them, whatever you do, do not put your name on it. Because if it's so stupid, I want to laugh at it and say how stupid it is without pointing out to the exact person. So I don't want anybody to raise their hands. But I must challenge or ask a question, which I think is fair, because I only ask fair questions. Don't raise your hands. Were the Ten Commandments as we known in the Garden of Eden and given to Adam and Eve? Now I want you to ponder that. Because it's absolutely, in my opinion, important to understand. Were the Ten Commandments given to Adam and Eve in the garden? Now, have you formulated your decision? Okay, well, let's look at some things. Here's Adam and Eve. First one, what's the first commandment? No other gods are for me. Second commandment, third commandment, fourth commandment. Right, what's the fifth commandment? So Adam and Eve, I want you to honor your father and your mother. Yes, Adam? Well, father, I think you're our father. But what's a mother? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Yes? Who with? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's belongings. What's a neighbor? When I was growing up, I was taught that God needed to test Adam and Eve to see if they loved Him. So He put a tree and said, if you love me, don't go to that tree. Now, I got a question to ask you. How many of you... Well, let's pick on Raylene. I like Raylene. You took care of what? Your grandson? How many tests did you give him in California that you did explicitly to just see if he loved you or not? Did you put a pot of boiling water on a stove and said, if you love me, you won't put your hand in there, but if you don't love me, go ahead and put your hand in there? Did you do that? Why not? Because then you want to know your grandkids love you or not? Why would we ascribe that to God? The same God that says, I know every thought before you even think it. I knew you before you were born. I knew you before you were created. I know the hairs on your head. My goodness, he says, if I can know a bird falls from a tree, what do you think I think about you? And then we come along and say, well, God must test see if we love Him and care for Him. And then we wonder why our children and grandchildren don't fall in love with a person who sits there with a skillet waiting for you to reach out for that candy and get whacked over the head. We put Santa Claus in a much better picture than we do God. What was the reason for the tree in the Garden of Eden? To me, this is a number one understanding. Come on in. These people are really being controversial. I need a level-headed person. Why was that tree put there? To me, that understanding begins to develop the picture that you have of God. Because if God arbitrarily had to have a test to see how you would function and what you would do, that certainly would seem out of character, because we as humans, if we have a normal mind, never do that to our children. We never say, see that freeway? See all them cars? Now, if you get in front of the cars out there, they're going to kill you. So I want to see what you're going to do. So I'm going to leave you here by the side of the freeway for 24 hours just to test you to see if you really love me or you want to go do your own thing. What would we do with a parent like that? Run them out on the freeway. Because that's exactly what they deserve. What person puts their child in harm just to see what they'll do? So why was the tree put there? Somebody come up with something. Yes, sir. I like it when college students come home and have answers. I tried it on my dad when I came home with answers, and he told me I was full of crap. So I hope we get a better answer from you. I
believe it was put there for a place for Satan to be able to live.
Okay. Well, I don't like to beat around the bush when I get the right answer. That's exactly right. Do you see what kind of God your father is? What was Satan's charge in heaven?
Couldn't be trusted. God wasn't fair.
Can't be trusted? Wasn't fair? Didn't want the best for his children? Didn't want to share? So now God creates? And he says to the devil, well, you can't have access. Could have said that. By the way, do we need a tree in the Garden of Eden for sin to come about? Think about that one for a second. That one I do want answers. Do we need a tree in the Garden of Eden that they cannot have access in order for sin to come about? Absolutely. So therefore, you don't need a devil to have sin. Because did the devil have a devil? Are you all coming back? You know, all three of you. I teach my salesmen, you know, when you're giving a presentation, you got to test the temperature to see where the customer is, see? So, I notice you haven't walked out, thank you. But you know, I just want to make sure you're all coming back, you know? Yeah. You don't need a devil for sin. Now, don't answer this one. Do you need a law for sin? Do you need a devil for sin?
What's a law?
Pardon?
What is a law?
I don't answer questions. I ask questions. Do you need a law for sin? All right, Trent, you awake?
As far as I know.
All right, I just got to say. Share with me what they're trying to do or did about the walking in the green light, pushing the button in the city of Arlington.
Oh, well, the city of Arlington recently put in some civil penalties under civil law where you can now get a citation for doing things such as when you're at a crosswalk and you push the button and it turns, the light turns white for you to walk across the crosswalk, and you don't walk across the crosswalk, you can be given a ticket.
Did you all know that? Do you all get that? You push the button, says walk, you don't walk, they can give you a ticket. Huh?
No, I said, so if the car's coming through, you have to walk anyway.
You don't want a ticket? Why? Rather be killed than get a ticket. See? Now, does that law make particularly sense? No. Why did they do that, Trent?
To make more money.
That's what they said. It'll increase our revenue by X number of dollars. You see, that's an arbitrary law. Somebody sat there that we voted for, saying, you know, I think we need a law. Get more money.
By the way, you can go vote today's voting day.
So, if you don't need a devil to sin, do you need a law to sin? And if so, what law did Satan break in heaven?
Didn't Adam and Eve,
pardon?
Didn't Adam and Eve sin in the Garden of Eden?
Did they?
What
do you think, class? Did they? And what was their sin? Who said that? Yeah, lack of trust.
The devil helped them with that.
But who helped the devil sin?
He was the first sin.
See? Who helped the devil sin? Yes, Adam and Eve was there. The devil presented his case. Certainly got Eve's attention. She went back. Do you understand that Eve was kind of deceived? Adam was not. Adam made a very specific act when he decided to join Eve. Very specific. God does not need to set a set of laws just to see if you're going to obey or not obey, nor a set of laws so that you can say, well, if I keep all of these, I'm not sinning. If I break one, I'm sinning. He doesn't. The devil had no law except one law in heaven. And no, it's a magnificent law in heaven. It was called the law of love. The law of relationship. God loved. He poured His love out to the angels. The angels receive that love, and in fellowship and relationship, they returned it to God. And that was the law that was in heaven. There was no law that said, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother. They didn't make sense. What was there was the law that is the most important, the relationship between the angels and God. And one day, the devil sat there and he began to think in his where? Mind and heart. This isn't fair. They're over there talking about creation. and I'm not included. Look at them. Then he began to say to the other angels, do you feel like you're treated fairly? Do you see kind of what I'm talking about? You know, they're... Let's move to the other end of the plan of salvation. Why does the United States have a law that says if you are sent to prison for 5 years, you cannot go hire somebody to go serve your sentence for you? Man, that seemed a logical thing to do. I had both of the DOS boys at one time worked for me. The smarter of the three bypassed me. See? Why did I just say, hey, Mill, how'd you like to have guaranteed wages for the next 5 years? Go sit down in the Arlington jail for me for 5 years. See? Why can't you do that? Pardon?
Because you wouldn't learn what you did wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, every time you wrote that check, you might help.
Back in those days, you better run to the bank first. It's always great to run a company when you sign, give them their paychecks and just say, hey, I think the first 5 of the 7 of you get to the bank's good. And by the way, I cashed mine yesterday. So. See? We come along with that. Do you see where we picture God? If we take a step backwards, we've really loved Jesus. But boy, that Father, by the way, the city of Arlington wanting to do this and that with the stoplight and you walk across, is that an arbitrary law?
Yes.
Yeah. They just said, we need more money. You know what really is an arbitrary commandment? Have you ever thought about this? What's the first commandment say? What? Man, you talk about arbitrary. How much more arbitrary can you be? Thou shalt have no other Sabbath school teachers before you but me.
Arbitrary.
Yes.
That reminds me, when I was in high school years and years ago, and I just come to Christ, and my friends all saw this change in me, and they started asking me questions. And the one friend said, Andrea, if I love a God, but it's not your God, will I still get to go to heaven? And I said, it depends if your God has a heaven for you.
Okay.
So, if there's no other God that can meet the needs of our hearts and of our life.
Oh, I think there's only one God to follow. But that's a pretty arbitrary statement. I mean, think about it. See, what makes sense is what Rob says and that I subscribe to. God says, if you know me, you'll never consider having any other God. See, if the Ten Commandments, which I agree with, is in the future, then that simply says, if you know me, well, you won't even think about having any other gods. But if you know me, you won't make any graven images. You'll appreciate the Sabbath. You won't even think about killing your brother or sister. Honoring your mother and father becomes natural. You won't want to covet. The whole controversy has been and is still going on that God is arbitrary. He makes arbitrary statements, arbitrary laws, and we have to fulfill them in order to be saved. Now, we catch it. What do you do when you substitute? Kosh? Forget. We interchange it. See? No wonder other theologians think that we're still under the law and not grace. Because if we're not careful, that's the way we present things. Does not do away with one thing that God has given us. It's just how do we look at it. God created a garden and God is fair. He gives us free will. And so He said to His two friends, Adam and Eve, enjoy everything. Just don't go to that tree. It's not good. But He allowed Satan to be there and present his side of the controversy. Because that's the way God is. Now here's the most amazing thing of all to me. The entire universe sat here for about 4,000 years and watched this all play out. What a risk God took when the flood came. Can you imagine what the devil did to the universe? I told you what happens if you don't follow God. Look what happens. But they sat and they watched all of this. They watched God as He worked with the children of Israel. They watched David. They watched the children of Israel go into captivity. Saw them get back out, rebuild the temple. They saw 4,000 years of Satan and God working. And this is the most amazing thing to me. They still were not convinced that God was totally trustworthy. Do you get that picture? They said, God, we trust You. Then they threw in that three-letter word that changes the entire structure. God, we trust You, but we're just not really sure. What a God that put up with that for all that time. What a patient, loving, kind God who said, that's okay, my children. Love you. They watched when Jesus was born. And there's the devil working with Herod to send in and kill all of those innocent babies. They watched that. They watched Satan take their Lord to the mountain and say, everything I have, I'll give You. Just think. The devil, this little earth, talking to the Creator of the universe, saying, this is what I'll give You. They saw that. But it's still. And then finally, at the cross of Calvary, they saw Jesus on the cross. Father, forgive them. They just don't know what they're doing. And they saw the devil himself among that crowd with angels that they had known for eternity. They saw them inciting that crowd, hollering, "Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him." And there they had the stark reality of the entire character of God on the cross, who says, "Father, forgive them." And they saw the character of Lucifer, the light being, the highest angel, their former friend, the one they loved. They saw him unmasked, hollering, "Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him." And when they looked at those two pictures, those two beings, forever, the controversy was settled, because they knew God was right and they saw the devil unmasked. That is the question today in our life. It's not a checklist. Do you keep the Sabbath? Yes. Well, we could spend the next 5 hours, what is good Sabbath keeping. Jews never figured out how many laws the Jews have for the Sabbath. 613 laws on how to keep the Sabbath. Eden? Well, they had that one down too. See, they knew the Ten Commandments inside, out, forward, backwards. The reason they knew it backwards, the Hebrew calls it backwards. Get the joke? Didn't do them any good. Because when the Creator of the universe came, the one who made them, who tried to help them, well, they killed him. Because he was a Sabbath breaker. Am I right? Did you learn that last week? Jesus was a Sabbath breaker. He got hungry, did something with corn, whatever you do with corn, I don't know what to do with corn. I was buying a can, let Sue cook it. He healed. He actually told a guy he just healed, "Pick up your bed and walk." And the whole church came down on the guy because he was carrying his bed. That's what the Ten Commandments, that's the center of your life, does. You don't see the man healed. You don't hear him praising. You don't hear him singing. You don't see him dancing. You don't hear him yelling with joy. You see him carrying a bed. God has said to all of us, "I just want to be the center of your life. I want to be foremost in your life." Now, when the grandkids come over, little Sue has them in there brushing their teeth. But when Kendall comes, who's 14, she's not in there brushing her Kendall's teeth. Why? Why she's having the 5-year-old one brush his teeth? Why?
Develop good
habits. Develop! That's why God gave the Ten Commandments in writing to a bunch of slaves who had no theology background, who said, "We will do everything that you want us to do." And when he revealed himself, what did they do? They ran. And they said, One of the most important lessons, I think, to learn in the plan of salvation, we don't want anything to do with Him. That's God they're talking about. The one that led them through the Red Sea, gave them fire at night, air conditioning in the day, fed them, gave them water, took care of their clothes, their feet. They don't want anything to do with Him. We want to talk to who? Moses. Wow. No, I'm just a human person. That would have kind of hacked me off. But God's God. And so He sat there with a group of about 2 to 3 million people. Most all of them, except probably 100, saying, "We don't want anything to do with you." And then God said, "Because this is God, I want something to do with you." So why did you tell them to build? And why? Now, I got a fair question. You remember us sitting in Augusta, Georgia, at the airport in those rocking chairs? Rob and I are sitting there. We're going through the Bible for about an hour in Augusta airport. We had Aiken, South Carolina. We did a seminar, and we were in Augusta Sabbath afternoon, and it was raining, and we're looking through this very topic. Rob and I are discussing it. And we see a baggage car come, a cart, guy carrying it along, and a suitcase falls off. And the guy keeps going. Rob says, "Oh, look at there. Somebody's suitcase fell off." "That's mine." All of a sudden, wasn't quite as humorous. Yeah, I didn't know Rob could move that fast. He's up there over that trailer. "Hey, that suitcase out there in that rain." Yeah, see? Now, I'm going to say a statement, then please bear with me. In my opinion, sanctuary has always been an afterthought. Sanctuary, plan C. Because if it's all that important, why didn't God give it to them when they crossed the Red Sea? When you all were kids, how many of you were Adventist kids about 4, 5, 6 years old? You know, y'all remember flannelgraph? You know, flannelgraph. You know, as always, Dallas Holmes says it. He was always confused with flannel graphs because, first of all, they all came out of a cigar box, you know. And one week the guy looked like Peter. The next week, the same guy looked like Adam, and, you know, see? So, was flannelgraph real? What was the meaning of doing a flannelgraph for a 4 or 5 year old kid? See it? What else? Keep their attention, and you let them partake, right? Because, man, you got to carry little Peter up, or little baby Jesus, and put him in the... Right? The children of Israel stood before God and said, "We want nothing to do with you. We're scared of you." Now, we'll talk to Moses. And you talk to Moses, and Moses will come down and tell us what you're saying. And God, because He is who He is, says, "No, I've got to be with you." So He then said, after they said, "I want nothing to do with you, let them build me a sanctuary so that I can be among my people." And then He had the sacrifices, He had the priests, He had the things. My opinion, a flannel graph story so that people would understand that when you can't talk face to face, person to person, you do the best you can. And when Jesus came to this earth, the first thing that happened at Calvary, the sanctuary service was done away with. Because man understood what he understood from the days of Adam. You have access to God. You always have, you always will. It's man who put up the curtain. It's man who said, I don't want anything to do with you. It's God who says, I've got to do the best I can. Law and grace, never been under a law. The graciousness of God is eternal. It's us. I got a whole bunch of grandkids, a couple of great grandkids. Treat each one of them different. I try to treat them individually so that I can have that relationship with them. I have no set rules. Some get away with murder. Some I'm pretty strict with. I just look at them as individuals. It's the way God works with us. If you're Paul or Saul, he'll knock you off your horse and blind you for 3 days to get your attention. Jesus Christ must be the center of our life. And that's it. That's why I love our ministry. We believe in the Ten Commandments. We believe that God wants the best for us. But until we present Jesus Christ and the love of God, we have no message. God is not arbitrary. For a parent with a skillet to say, you eat this candy, bam, go to bed without any supper, and then hire somebody to guard the candy for eternity that they don't get it, is ludicrous. For somebody to say somebody's got to die, just because I say somebody's got to die, and we're going to substitute, we don't even allow that in America. But when Christ went to the cross, as you look at the cross, you're kind of like Joshua. Choose you today. Choose life or death. Moses, life or death. As you look at the cross, when you follow God, it is life. When you choose to separate yourself from the life giver, the natural consequences of that decision is death. And the key word in that phrase is natural. Somebody turn out the light. When you flip the switch, there is no electricity. When you run from God and disconnect, there is no life. It's that simple. Father in heaven, thank you for loving us for who we are. Thank you for appealing to us and who we are. Your truths are forever. Your death tells us how much you cared. To the universe, it unmasked the devil and showed your character. May we look at the cross and forever see your love. And may we choose life every day. In Jesus' name, amen.